Trekkies, and welcome to another episode of Trek Freaks on the Geek Freaks Podcast Network. In this podcast, we review episodes of Star Trek starting all the way back in the original series. This is going to be a very special tribute episode to Nichelle Nichols, who you all know we recently lost. I know this episode's probably coming out a couple weeks after her passing, so We've all had some time to mourn. We do record a little bit in advance, so we had some episodes already ready to release. But that being said, I do have a special guest joining me today. We've actually had him on a couple of times recently.
I don't know how special I am.
But this is Frank, the one and only producer, director, I don't know, podcast extraordinaire.
We could throw more titles. I could wait if you want to add more titles. I don't mind.
Right. I'm trying to think.
Editor. Lieutenant? What the hell? Let's throw it in there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Captain. Come
Captain.
On.
Captain. Oh, boom.
Nine different podcasts that you completely manage yourself.
I am changing my Gmail signature from producer of Geek Freaks to Captain of Geek Freaks.
There you go. I mean, you could throw Admiral. I don't know. How high does ranking go?
Oh, I don't know. That's too classy for me, guys. Admirals are sticklers. Actually, right. Yeah, then probably Admiral.
So this is a crazy coincidence that Nichelle Nichols, yep. You know, and it's terrible that she passed away.
Of course.
And the timing is just odd for me because this episode that we were supposed to be reviewing this time around was very disturbing to me and I really didn't like it. And it was because of something that happened with her character. And we'll get into it more. But the episode is The Gamesters of Triskelion, season 2, episode 16. But yeah, it's just odd. So we're going to talk about the episode a little bit, but then we actually want to spend most of our time diving into Nichelle Nichols' life and how she was in Star Trek and how she impacted the rest of the world even after Star Trek.
Excellent idea, I think. And we'll be tactful about how we speak about things in this episode specifically, because there's actually a couple things I actually noticed that were pretty damning in this episode that do not age well. Or actually, I'm sorry. Did not present well back then, I could imagine.
Yeah. You know. I'm surprised they made it to the screen. This is stuff that I think would have been caught in like the editing room or just, you know what, this one doesn't work and just been dropped. But producers, you know, do what they do and things were different back then. I get it. But yeah, there's no sugarcoating it. It's a really rough episode.
All right, let's get underway though. Let's try to start off with something like, do you have a question, Jonathan, for us to start off things with?
Oh, shoot.
I do if you don't.
Yeah, let's go with yours. You're much more prepared this time around than I am.
I got lots of notes. Okay. Nice. Now, in this situation, we see Spock as a captain, and Spock stays cool when he's in the captain's seat. My question for you, Jonathan, do you think Vulcans have an advantage in the promotion series because of their mindset? And if not, do you think there are other races that might become better captains and therefore Starfleet gives them the advantage?
So... There's some caveat to all that. I think in the perfect world that yes, Vulcans are highly intellectual. They're super smart. Mm-hmm. They're stronger. They're genetically just in every way, it seems like, better than humans. We see that their lack of humanity is also crippling sometimes, that they don't have the compassion that we have. So that is a struggle. But in the grand scheme of things, I think Vulcans are more often than not better than humans and more effective in a, you know, following the rules and playing by the book, you know, structured environment like the military, like Starfleet. That being said, there's also the fact that Starfleet is governed primarily by humans.
Yeah.
And humans have a really terrible track record for being racist and discriminatory. So somebody like Spock or any Vulcan to really move up the ranks, you know, it's just like the pay gap with women nowadays, though he may be smarter and may do so much better than some other captain somewhere, he's not going to have an equal opportunity. So his greatness might just bring him up to par with somebody else.
So you think like if you're an admiral in the situation, there might be situations where people are like, yeah, you know, sure. This new Vulcan's really smart and level headed and that'd be great in a battle, but he's not a human, so I don't like that idea that there's that kind of racism in Starfleet, but I could see where it might exist.
Yeah, and I don't think it's like open racism, like, well, yeah, that guy sucks and this guy's great, but it's the captain's has the prerogative of like gut feeling. I don't remember what they worthies for it, but they'll use that and say, you know, I just got a gut feeling that, you know, Ken Williams from Montana is going to be a more Starfleet captain than Bokchak from, you know,
Bokchak. Classic Bokchak, folks. Can't forget old Bokchak.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's, I would hope that in the future we don't have any of those, you know, racism or discrimination or... Well, it's a different word when it's against different species.
Species?
Xenophobia.
Oh, there you go. Xenophobia. There you go. Yeah,
that's a big word. That's my one better. For the week.
So I think maybe Spock is kind of the perfect scenario because of his half-human nature. It is something where we see even in this episode, he tiptoes into human reaction quite a bit. This gut feeling. And he's like, well, it's not a gut feeling. We have information. And then you got Bones. And Scotty's like, no, that's a gut feeling. You're checking over there because you know, both of them debate. I love that part of this where you have the three of them on the bridge talking. Mm-hmm. And there is a little bit of a human reaction from Spock. And even the part with, like, I think it was Hope. He was saying, somebody was like, oh, isn't Hope a human reaction? He's like, well, basically it rubs off on you from the humans around you. Well, maybe not for a full-on Vulcan, but he's got the half-human blood. So maybe he's, you know, seeing that in there. I wonder if he's just happens to be the best case scenario. All right, guys, let us know what you think. Head on over to Twitter, Instagram, and all that stuff. Go to the Geek Freaks Network podcast, social medias, or our Discord, and let us know your opinion. What Starfleet race should be captains, and who has favor? And what do you think about the Vulcans? I don't know. Sometimes I don't trust them. You got to watch Lower Decks. Go watch Lower Decks, Jonathan. They have a really good thing with the Vulcan captain stuff.
Oh, gosh. Someday.
Yeah. All right, you want to go into that warp speed recap? I know, someday.
Right? Yep.
All right, guys, this is going to be extra tricky because we're on the fly. This is where we don't even know if we're going to pass through a planet. You ever see that in the Starfleet thing? Star Trek. They're like a little worried about it. So, all right. So here we go. We're starting our warp speed recap. The crew is teleporting, but unfortunately, by some happenstance, they randomly get dragged to another planet. It is Uhura, Chekov, and Captain Kirk. Of course, Captain Kirk. He's always got to go to a planet. I don't know why. But anyways, while down there, they find out they're basically an American Gladiators, and they have to fight other people. There's some very unfortunate breeding situations that is not really needed in the plot, but it's there. We find out that three brain-like gods, or godlike brains, I guess, are really running things, and they keep betting against each other, which, what currency do they have? We don't know. In the end, Kirk, instead of trying to talk his way out of it, decides, I'll fight your dudes, and then I'll win my freedom. An odd choice for the end of end of this thing. During his fight, he totally cheats. I'll just throw that out there. We'll talk about it later on. And he wins, and Enterprise is able to go. Oh, there's so many things that are wrong with this episode. I've already wanted to bring them up, but I'm not going to yet. And the people, the other thralled people, the other slaves on the planet, will be trained to have society to live out on their own. And Enterprise is able to live out another day.
That was a really good on the fly. I know inertial dampeners were failing and you had to reroute power, but that was a pretty stable warp speed recap.
We came out of warp and right away an asteroid hit a nacelle off of us. That was a tough one. It was rough.
Nice.
What'd you think of this episode overall? Like, let's take out the problematic things. Just story-wise, what'd you think of this episode?
Just the broad story. It wasn't terrible. Mm-hmm. I get it's kind of a gladiator situation. There was just so much wrong with it. It could have been a good episode. It's probably written relatively well. It's just execution. There was so much messed up in it. It was just distracting. You couldn't enjoy it.
Yeah. I will say that I think the makeup department had a lot of fun in this episode because the other combatants, this alien planet, they all looked like they were just like, hey, like for example, Kirk, for some reason, is wearing a leather halter vest the entire time. And it's not explained why. The neck thing is important to keep them in prison on this planet, but for some reason they're like, also put that one in a vest. Like, okay. Yeah. What was the reason for that?
And it's kind of like a harness. It looks like
a harness is better for it. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like what they'd probably suspend them when they're going to do, you know, flying tricks and stuff like that. Or
kind of looks like a leather daddy kind of thing. Like he's into something else. I'm like, hey, whatever you got to do, Kirk. This is a weird planet.
Right.
But
everybody's costumes, like the girl that's wearing a foil and you know, green hair and stuff like that, they look like 80s metal band, like music video is what it looks like.
I think her name is Shauna and I'm in love with her actually, but yes, I think you're right. She was pretty awesome. Side note. Okay, so The planet, I think, looks pretty cool. I think they put a little extra money in this one with that arena. They were going to use the arena a lot. So it was like, yeah, man, that's kind of a big stage they're battling on. They did a good job with that, I think.
Yeah, it was a pretty good set. I mean, almost everything, like you're saying, it was almost all took place in that arena. Yeah. That and like kind of a cell tunnel looking set.
Which that
set,
too looks good. Yeah.
Yeah. So they put a little extra effort. It's just they, in the story, the actual, I would have to say it's got to be director choices that were really the problem in this episode. But the setting, I'm surprised they didn't reuse that set in other episodes afterwards, because it seemed, I mean, how much space did that have to take up? That was pretty big.
Well, I wonder if they used a lot of it, because the music in this it was used a lot, was the classic Star Trek fight scene. And I'm making sure to mention that so that editor Frank can edit it in right now. Everybody can enjoy it for a little bit. Yeah, that music right there is amazing, and I absolutely love it. So you got a lot of it in this one, and it reminds me, I think this might be like the same actual set with like some changed pieces, and like, hey, let's put this cool prince down, as the one where he's fighting Spock from before.
Yeah.
Kind of feels like that.
That would make sense, yeah. I heard, was it Stage 19? When I listened to the Delta Flyer podcast, they say Stage 19 was the rock set. The cave set. And they used came from the original series, and they would use it for all kinds of stuff and just completely, you know, redress it and change lighting and stuff like that, and it would be everything. So I don't know if maybe this was original pieces from that set or not, but
that'd be cool. On the list of podcasts I need to listen to is the Delta Flyers. It's a Voyager podcast with Tom and Harry Kim. There's one of them I want to listen to really bad. It's called Two Bears. I watch their TikToks all the time. But it's like, if you and I were to start a podcast with Miguel and had beers while we're podcasing, it's that. And I'm just like, oh, nice. Man, that looks like it's fun.
Well, I mean, what are we missing? I got a beer.
I know. We just got to get Miguel. If we were to record in his, I think, honestly, if we were to record in his garage and do that, it really would be fun. I think that'd be a good idea. Back to this episode. Okay, so we have them kind of getting in here. We're learning that, hey, you guys are enslaved. You're going to be battling for us. It's a real sci-fi kind of premise. It's nothing too crazy. I hate the fact that we're using a new god character. We do have like this intermediate character, this guy who's like middle management, and he's actually designed by the villain from the Flash series back in the old days. He's actually motivated or he's actually inspired by that character. His ability is weird though. He has like the ability to like shock collar them with his eyes. Did you get that? Like it was really weird.
Yeah. I didn't really understand that. Like, does he have magic or is he just some kind of other species? And they didn't really explain any of it. He was just had some kind of power. I think they did say that he was given that power from the gangsters, the gods. Yeah. But it was kind of odd. Yeah. We didn't really know the limits of his abilities or anything too.
Perk even mentions, which I thought was very interesting, that this might be a different dimension. It was a different planet, but he mentions it could be a different dimension. And it felt like that to me. Like, everything here was like, this doesn't feel like it's even in our space. Did you get that vibe? Like, this feels almost like fantasy-based?
Yeah. Do you think that... I agree. Do you think that would have been better if to get out, they had to transport through some kind of singularity or some hocus-pocus that would make it, you know, bring them back to their dimension? To me, that would kind of keep all this weirdness in a bubble and not contaminate the rest of their... show.
I think that would have been better. It almost felt like Labyrinth, the movie Labyrinth, had the kind of the almost like a mist always going through kind of thing, purple lighting for some reason. It was that vibe the entire time. All right, let's go ahead and get to the worst part of this episode, Jonathan. Each of these people are in a prison cell, Uhura, Chekhov, and Kirk. The other combatants, they basically go to each cell, and this is a assigned love making, we will say, for the most like G-rated version of this. It is you want to describe that scene, Jonathan, a little bit in the most tactful way possible, if possible?
Yeah, so it's hard to be graceful with it, but a man goes into a horror cell and she's screaming. We can hear she's trying to fight him off.
Yeah.
We don't see them in the cell, but we see Kirk's reaction. He's
there's
yelling.
Shadow of them like fighting back and forth, but it's clear what's happening.
Yeah, and we hear Kirk yelling, you know, get off her, and he's trying to get out of his cell. But that is it. He doesn't get out of his cell. He doesn't stop the attacker that's, you know, attacking Uhura.
It cuts to commercial.
Yeah, and then we come in. yeah, we come back, and I know at some point the attacker says she, or one of them says, she won't be able to resist if she's selected, which later they explain being selected means that the owners yeah. of these slaves pairs the slaves together and says, okay, the two of you are going to breed to increase our stock, or, you know, give us more.
Yeah. And the, another level to the selection thing, once you're selected, if you resist, it's death instead of shock collar. It's like a death collar. So there's that level too. So, I presume that either rape or attempted rape, and the fact that, I mean, it's heartbreaking to watch. It's super hard to watch. And the fact they just cut to commercial, and it was like, what? Could you imagine watching the Tide commercial after seeing that? Like, it would devastate me.
It's like they don't care, and it doesn't make sense back in the 60s, except for maybe the race card, how they didn't, you know, treat her the same as other people back then.
I can't even imagine listening to other podcasts
and stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, I would understand. It would still be rough, but I would understand if after the scene and a later scene, they address it. You know, maybe Kirk pulls her aside, like, hey, are you okay? What can I do? Or, you know, we can talk about this when there's time, or something. They pretend it never happened.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a thing. There was no even nothing about it. And that is like, that's, I know, I feel bad for women, especially like Black women, and Nichelle Nichols, who's playing Uhura.
Yeah, everybody on set being, during the scene. Yeah.
Yeah. So deeply disrespecting her character and the struggle that she's fighting to, you know, support and people she's representing. Like, it was not tasteful at all.
It was a very hard scene to watch, guys. And this episode is mediocre. I got a 7 on IMDb. I like to check the ratings to kind of tell you guys afterwards. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you now. It got a 7 on IMDb. So mediocre, with a C. You could skip this one, in my opinion. And that scene alone really made me feel uncomfortable. And so I would probably vote to skip this one.
And honestly, I kind of didn't want to record a review of this one. I was just going to say, this was a really bad episode, don't even watch it, and skip on to the next one. Right. But it was uncomfortable. But
it's hard, but we almost have to bring it up, because otherwise, you know, it's like you have to bring it up, or else they're also just ignoring it, which is what they did with the rest of the episode.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And I mean, this untimely passing of Nichelle Nichols is like, wow, it sucks that she's being disrespected in this episode. And, you know, we're going to be talking about her, obviously, anyway. So it was just kind of crazy timing, I guess, for me.
Let's move on to the next part here, but let's kind of shift gears to kind of get away from this planet a little bit. Meanwhile, Spock, Bones, and McCoy, Spock, Bones, Scotty are on the bridge of the Enterprise, and they're speeding as fast as they can. Two different locations. They're kind of guessing and checking. Spock's got kind of an idea of where they might be due to some evidence he has. The other two think he's just fully doing a gut reaction move here. Why do you think McCoy's on the bridge the whole time? Scotty, it makes sense. Like, he's doing like math and he's checking signs. Scotty makes sense. Why is McCoy there?
I think it's just because Kirk is not on the bridge. I mean, they're too short on the bridge. They need more people there, more interaction. So I'm pretty sure he's there. I mean, he's probably there to be, you know, throw in his opinion too, if the guys need support. Story-wise,
yeah. But, or like, you know, yeah.
but yeah, I think they're just kind of, there's not enough players on the bridge to make it feel full.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Kirk and Uhura and Chekov, all three bridge crew members that are off. So it would just feel a little empty if you don't have.
They brought in an extra body. And actually gave her quite a bit of lines, which is really rare for the show in this season to do that.
Yeah.
It felt like to me, like the whole, like there was even a part where like McCoy and Scotty are like, just kind of like strolling in the background, waiting for Spock to stop doing something so I could talk to him again. And it was like, get to work, guys. Like, you wouldn't see that on modern Star Trek. You would see the doctor in medical bay, you know, worried about something else, you know.
Yeah.
Or worried about this, but not being there to get in everybody's business. I love Bones. He's my favorite character of the show, but I just think he's not useful, you know.
Yeah, he has no responsibilities on the bridge. He's not doing his job there. Unless there's somebody sick on the bridge, then okay, you come check him out while they're working if it's not, you know, life-threatening, but yeah, he should be back in the sick bay.
It was weird. And then I love the line of like, basically they negotiated Scotty doing his job, But Spock's like, hey, can you get us past warp six? And they negotiated back and forth, and he finally agreed, like, yeah, we'll go back and check on the planet that we were at last, basically to see if they're there. But all right, I can get seven and a little bit more. And I love the idea. I think he actually mentions it on Next Generation, Scotty does. The idea of, like, you tell the captain one number, but you know what the real number is, kind of thing. So that you could kind of, and I just love that Scott is constantly doing that. He's constantly like, I'm giving her all she's got, Captain. And yet somehow you give her more. So you'd had more to give her, you know. It's just kind of funny that Scotty's play that role. And just amazing acting by all the three of these actors in their conversations, them having this debate on what to do next. It was really fun to watch these three talk. I always love that.
Yeah. And usually sometimes the B story isn't much. It's really like shallow or something like that. But I like that they're kind of pulling strings with Spock, and, you know, playing around with the fact that he's kind of going on a gut hunch. That was kind of funny, when really, I mean, he saw there was a change in some kind of radiation, but it was like so far away. How could our transporters all of a sudden beam them this many light years away? But it was just these brains, the gamesters of Triskelion, that were able to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that he recognized that, and to him, it's like, no, this is just logical. This is only thing that would make sense. There's obviously no sign of them in this planet, but yeah, to everyone else, they're like, no, that's a bunch of BS. That's crazy. You're just going on a gut hunch.
Yeah.
That was fun.
All right, let's get back to our planet here. Kind of speed run through a little bit of what's going on here. There's three brains that are running this planet. We'll give you the reveal now, guys. You know, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Three brains running this planet. I mean, talk about, like, we ran out of budget. We got to figure out a god for this thing. So it's three weird brains that are running everything. And they're betting against each other because I guess they're completely bored. They pick teams, and now our three Enterprise crewmates are part of the red team. Go red team. And they're going to be doing American Gladiators. And at this point, if they try to refuse anything, instead of getting stung, they'll just be killed. And Kirk is starting to do his, like, wooing one of the contestants. Classic Kirk, right, at this point. This is something we can expect from him. He's going to try to seduce any woman he can to try to survive.
Yeah. And this other contestant too, this is another thing that just kind of bugs me about this episode. And it's, I don't know, it's the times and blah, blah, blah. I got to stop talking so negative about Star Trek.
This
I pretend like I like
tough.
It. No. So we have this situation going on with Uhura, this, you know, and then on the other side, you have this contestant who's half naked. I mean, she's wearing like foil around her breasts and stuff. Like, it's obviously very revealing, and you're selling tickets. You're putting this on screen to get viewers.
Yeah.
And yet you're neglecting your, you know, one of your star characters who's, you know, being attacked. So it's like, come on, guys, that's just not tasteful at all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely the dude department wrote this one.
Yeah. I think it would have been better if she was more like, you know, Resident Evil, like wearing this, you know, badass gear,
like,
and not
gear.
Half naked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, strong woman ready to fight, like intimidating, even great, but
I keep
she's like
comparing,
a damsel in distress on this planet.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what she's playing. I keep comparing this planet to American Gladiators. It's a lot because of her costume. It's straight up like American Gladiators. If you threw some American flags on this, you'd have it. But they would dress just like that. And they'd have that, like, Tina Turner in Mad Max 3 hair, but green. And God, that's a good movie, guys. Go watch that. But anyways, yeah, you know, that whole thing going on. Okay, so scene two of three that really turned my stomach in this episode, and I was shocked by it. Later on, he's in their cell together, and they're supposed to be mating, and they all kind of have the plan to break out together. All the crewmen know. So Kirk just punches this woman, knocks her out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, like, what the hell? Like, who fucking wrote this? So
right?
Weird.
Like, there's other ways. Put her in a sleeper hold if you need to incapacitate her. But
even that's not great. You know,
but I mean, he just like sucks her in the face.
What if, like, this is a medicinal plant we found when they're jogging earlier. This is a medicinal plant we found. We take it sometimes to make us go to sleep easier. Use that to, well, you're still drugging a woman then. Ugh, fuck.
Yeah.
Maybe don't make this episode.
Yeah. Convince her of your side and she will willingly participate.
Yes.
There you go.
And she wants to lead her people. Okay, John, you're solving it. That headcanon, boys, working good.
I don't know. That's a tough one to fix.
Something I caught, John, that I want to bring it up to you. So Spock references the Bible, not very common, but he references the idea of going in with the lions, right?
Kirk did mention in a previous episode, too, that
there's
their
only
God,
one God, yeah.
That, Yeah, one god is good for us on life. So it is of the times and kind of baked in.
Well, I just think that's interesting in reference. So also Scotty mentions God later on. And then, my notes are messy on this, but they talk about the planet. They talk about, that's what it was. Betting, like they make a deal, like Kirk's going to make a deal with the brains here in a second. And that's something you do with the devil. Like you make a deal with them to try to get out of hell. So I thought is this planet hell? And is saviors coming? Like, was there some sort of symbolism there? You know, I was just wondering, like maybe somebody who's a lot smarter than the two of us can find like, oh, this is a symbolism for lust. This is a symbolism for gluttony.
I had to say it. The writers of this episode are not smarter than us. Maybe back in the 60s. I don't know. Things were different, but I don't know. I've seen little like underlying religious, you know, messages and stuff. I don't think they're much intentionally put there, but I think it's just kind of, you know, a little bit of the person goes into the art.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. They probably didn't think, you know, so many years, 50 years down the road or whatever, that religious differences and the viewership was going to be so diverse and things like that, that they had to really try to, you know, not polarize themselves or anything like that. But you know, the world has changed a lot since these were written, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. This episode could not be made today. All right. At that point, I'm sorry. I'm kind of like, I noticed now that I'm kind of at this point, I'm realizing I'm the one doing the scene by scene, but
it's
taking
okay.
over John. So
you're good.
Kevin can't come back. Damn it. Okay. We actually see the glowing brains in place now. And boy, those are real fancy. They're like pulsating and they like literally are all in the same light beat too. So they couldn't even give them individual lights. It's just a light from underneath.
And they're in a dome. It reminds me of that game in arcades where you got to hit the button to stop the light and it's going in a circle or something like that. I was like, they could have remade this into some kind of arcade game.
Kirk, this entire episode, William Shatner, this entire episode, and especially here, boy, that guy is overacting. You notice how much he's like really Kirk in this episode?
Yeah. I wonder if there was a reason. Was this like maybe because he didn't like this episode or it was especially difficult or something like that, but. Yeah, it was a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, more likely for him, it was like near Emmy season. And so he's like, I'm going to throw my fist at this one. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we have this... that's another one. So he talks to the brains, and then So he has this battle, right? Okay, let's just get this part. The bet is he could take on he could kill three of their combatants. He does the fight, and he wins. In the fight, by the way... He's supposed to stay on his color, and if you watch like the overhead cam, he's constantly stepping on the other colors, which is supposed to disqualify him immediately, and they just ignore it. So frustrating.
Yeah, it's too fun to watch. You can break the rules. It's okay.
Yeah, he's like tumbling and stuff like that. You could tell he's like, let me put the stick here and like jump over it. Like it reminds me of like a 12-year-old's like, watch me do this, Dad, and he does some cool trick. Kirk was doing that all over the place.
The guy you see in the park that's like practicing for LARPing and he's just like way too into it.
Yeah. It was that on the office where they're like yelling parkour, parkour, and he's like jumping in.
jumping off stuff.
That's what Kirk was doing today. So he won but cheated. Anyways, so he mentions earlier to the brains, and then he brings it up afterwards because he won. That if he wins, that the thralls, which means slaves, so the slaves on this planet, which have been plucked from all around the galaxy with this technology that could teleport things, so they could be teleported back, you'd assume. But anyways, that they will be trained and educated, they'll be trained and educated. And he says, it's what we have done. We have trained and educated cultures throughout the galaxy. This is the third of the bad things that happens. That's called imperialism. And it's really bad.
Sounds like, was it Spain that was kind of going around the country, around the world
Europe,
doing that?
Yeah. It's America. Yeah. The idea
the British. British really educated those Native Americans.
Yeah. Or you know, India. They really educated India. And it's like, it's a shame that it's in this episode because it's like the idea, like that phrase right there is like, I thank God that later on they're like prime directive because otherwise they would have gone, you know, they would have brought the Enterprise to some culture that's in the Middle Ages. Come on down as like, guess what, guys, transporters are God and you're listening to us now. And it's like, my God.
Yeah, that's just kind of crazy. I mean, like you said, the best thing they could do is even in the deal, don't say free everybody, say free everybody and send them back to their home planets.
Yeah.
Like they need to be with their own culture. I get if you leave them without these gods taking care of them, they're not going to survive. I mean, might not survive, but leaving them there and teaching them your ways, I mean, it's good for you and your people. You have another colony now that's been established, but these individuals, you know, were plucked from their own planets and made slaves. They should be returned home.
Yeah, not taught in your ways and made a new civil. And which Kirk says later on, he says, it'll be the best game you ever play. And it's like, oh my God, bro. you are.
Now you're the gamester.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, I'm just hearing slave already, masters. Like, hey, they got spices on that island. Let's go visit them. Like, no, no, no.
Yeah. Humans are pretty terrible.
Oh, I know. What a fun episode, folks. Enterprise goes off on their ways and leaves the planet alone. And Jonathan, what would you rate this episode, man?
It's got to get a hard F.
A hard F. Yeah. I'll give it a C minus because I do like the fight. Oh, so like that was a big part of the episode, is like what they're aiming to do is like give you, hey, let's give them an action packed episode. That part was cool. So it was like a C minus, D plus, maybe lower. But of course, the problematic parts make it unwatchable in the end of the day.
Moving on from the episode, we're going to talk more about Nichelle Nichols. As you know, she passed away recently on July 30th, 2022. And that was just a devastating blow. Yeah. You know, we've lost some great Star Trek actors and actresses in the past, but, you know, it's always hard. But especially Nichelle Nichols was so iconic, such an impactful actress. It's just hard to see her go. It's even in her later years, she's been engaged with fans and, you know, really being known, you know, being active out there. So it's rough to lose her.
Yeah.
But I want to talk a little more about her past and how she kind of got into Star Trek and how she impacted the world after that.
Nichelle Nichols, she was born in a suburb outside of Chicago. Her dad was a factory worker. His name was Samuel Earl Nichols. And her mother, LaShia Nichols, was a homemaker. What I love is her dad was a factory worker, then became mayor and chief magistrate of the town. That's wow, the can-do attitude we see in Nichelle Nichols. She totally got that from her parents.
Man.
She went to her parents. She was originally born Grace Dell Nichols. This was in December 28th, 1932. Boy, late December birthdays. Not to throw us off, but those always suck. You get combo gifts. You never get a proper birthday. Anyways,
and it's right between Christmas and New Year's, so it's like, oh, you already got your gift. Yeah, sorry, kid.
You notice you that your gift in comes a couple in Christmas wrapping. Come on.
Yeah, right? And we're going to throw a party for you in a couple more days. Just relax. Yeah.
Be a big one at midnight. So Grace Dell Nichols, she asked for a name change. She just didn't quite like it. So her parents said, you could be, we'll offer you Nichelle, which means victorious maiden. And she's like, I love it. So she went with Nichelle Nichols. That's what she was known as. I just like that name, Victorious Maiden. That's such a cool, that's like a good tattoo name or something. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. No, that's pretty awesome. What it means that in what language?
It's, I think it's Greek.
Not to derail you.
No, I think it's Greek because it's based off of Nike.
Like Latin.
Or Nike, or Latin maybe. And then the suffix L. So like the feminine version of Nike. Okay. Thanks, Jonathan.
Right. So I asked that because I don't want to jump too far. I love that you're starting at her childhood. But later when she is helping Gene Roddenberry develop her character, because they wanted her on the show. They didn't have a name or backstory, anything yet. So she's the one who said, okay, my character is going to be going to know Swahili.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think she said she's going to be from not African-American, but she's going to be from the United States of Africa in the future. But that her name's going to be Nyota Uhura, which in Swahili is roughly translated from Swahili, meaning the Star of Freedom.
Oh my God.
So I imagine like in the South back in, you know, our slave days, the slaves trying to follow the North Star to freedom kind of thing.
Oh, John, like, you're blowing my
that's
mind.
That's pretty cool. Right? Yeah. I know not a lot of people talk about the first name, Nyota, but that's another source, YouTube video I watched explained that actually would be translated from Swahili, meaning star, and Uhura was famously known as freedom. So it's pretty
cool.
That
is amazing. Yeah. A young Nichelle Nichols with a brand new name. She wanted to be a dancer. And so she began her career as a singer and a dancer, touring across the United States and Canada with Duke Ellington. She sung this to Duke Ellington, one of the best, you know, early jazz singers. And back in the, like, not early Jazz singers, but like in the early 50s and stuff like that. He's so amazing. Our Grandpa Martin had a lot of Duke Ellington records and stuff. So that's just so freaking cool that Nichelle Nichols is on those records. I'm just, if she's touring with him, I'm assuming, you know, she was on.
Yeah.
She would slowly make appearances on different plays and stuff like that. She kind of became a singing, started to sing on the plays. And then she was even, her first film appearance was in Porgy and Bess, which would later on become a play. And she was like the premier person to play in Porgy and Bess when that came out. This is a really fun story. So for context, back in the day, Playboy was, yes, a dirty magazine, but it's also kind of like a cool way of life in a way. They had like, not cool way of life. Their nightclubs were very problematic. And now there was an investigation that went really interesting. But anyway, so she was in a satire of the mm-hmm. Playboy Club. And it was called, oh God, what was it called? Oh, she played Hazel Sharp. And anyways, it was a satire of this thing. Instead of being called Playboy Magazine, it was called Orgy Magazine. And so she played in it. It was a play for it, and it only lasted a little while. But one of the people that was in the audience was Hugh Hefner himself of Playboy. And oh, he wow. was blown away by her singing. He was just blown away. So the Chicago Playboy Club, one of the two biggest Playboy clubs in the world, he asked her, can you please come perform at my nightclub? And she would play there often. And I mean, that was a pretty big deal. Like, I know it kind of, there's a bit of a tough way to look at it, but it was a big deal to be able to perform at that club. That was a big deal.
And like you kind of alluded to, we have a skewed perspective of it now because to us, Playboy is just porn, which has flooded the internet. Right. It's everywhere. It's tons of different magazines. I'm sure back then there was probably just a few that were being printed at most. And it wasn't like Playboy wasn't just a porno magazine like, I don't know, it's everywhere else. It would have been like for the elites, for the rich, for the guys that are going out and, you know, partying and drinking, like this, you know, unique level of living that we typically don't see or experience. And so those kind of people, right?
Yeah. And then the nightclubs specifically were kind of this like exclusive thing where you'd hear about Hugh Hefner in his velvet jacket. Kind of like if Elon Musk had a nightclub that he only invited like the best people, the richest people to kind of thing. So you got to kind of keep that idea on it. It was like that kind of elite.
And back in this time, it was like the mob bosses and the union reps and stuff like that, right?
That's a good way to look at it.
Imagine.
In January 1967, a true honor for Nichols was Nichelle Nichols. Sorry, I keep saying Nichols. Nichelle Nichols. She was featured on the cover of Ebony magazine and had two feature articles published in only 5 years. So she was a very big deal. It was a lot about how she was traveling with Duke Ellington and her work with Duke. She would continue traveling even into Europe as part of Duke Ellington's roster and will continue to perform there. And then she got that role, John, that you were talking about on Lieutenant. Have you looked into that show yet? I, of course, had to follow that rabbit hole.
Well, so I didn't. I just heard that it was short. It was only like a couple seasons,
right? Two seasons.
So that's kind of crazy that, you know, I mean, I know the original series was only three as well, so it didn't, you know, go on forever. But that, you know, she was just, I don't think she was a big main character. She was a, like a cameo or a side character in a couple episodes, I think three episodes.
The main episode that kind of became the big deal was an episode called To Set It Right. And it dealt with racial prejudice in the Marine Corps. So the episode followed a group of Marines out of Pennington. I think it was, I have the whole description of it here. And it was, so they had the Cold War going on. It was kind of like a MASH thing where it's all about like debating morals and stuff like that. It's this really interesting story, but all set at this facility, this training camp on the West Coast for Marines worried about the Cold War sparking up. And so you have this whole thing like, you know, we're so close to having to possibly lose our lives. And it follows platoon leader, Lieutenant William Tiberius Rice. Yeah.
Interesting. That's a Gene Roddenberry show, huh?
Yeah. So Gene Roddenberry, who made the show, clearly used Tiberius again as James T. Kirk's middle name. But also on the show, we had Leonard Nimoy come on. We had a lot of different actors from Star Trek would come on to this show. Pretty neat.
I forgot to. This is terrible because I don't have useful information. I'm just going to be talking. But there was a different name. James T. Kirk was going to be, he was going to have a different middle name. And I think they changed it at the last minute to Tiberius, but I can't remember what the other middle name was going to be. Like I said, useless information. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm kind of snowballed because I went off on a rabbit hole, man. I wrote so many notes and stuff, and I'm using a lot of wiki notes that I pulled together. So
Nice.
I'm going to be probably talking a lot just because I'm like, it's Nichelle Nichols. I love her so much. So. And then from there, she went on to do Star Trek. John, do you want to talk about her Star Trek time a bit?
Yeah, so it was interesting to learn about her joining in Star Trek. Gene Roddenberry obviously knew her, worked with her before, and he wanted her from the beginning. He wanted her in the show. When he was submitting the first pilot, even before he submitted the first pilot, her character was in the original script, mm-hmm. or concept, I guess. I don't know. I think it was script. And the producers were like, okay, you know, this is pretty cool, but they thought she was just going to be like a yes sir, no sir, yes captain, no captain,
yeah.
sitting in a chair. And it wasn't until they started filming that they realized, like, oh no, she's going to be a pretty prominent character. She's going to be one of the, you know, five or six main characters. And they're like, no, that can't happen. You just gotta, you can't sign a contract with her.
Yeah. She has to be like extra contract, which is basically, you know, speaking lines kind of thing like that, you know?
Yeah. So that's what they said is, if you sign a contract, you know, we're just not going to fund your show or something like that. So to get around that, he fought with them for a while, but to get around that, he went ahead and said, okay, we know what we'll do is we'll pay her by the day. And so it, like you're saying, like an extra, like someone who's just going to be in a short scene, work for, you know, a few hours and then go. In doing that, she actually made more money than if she had signed a contract with them, and it ended up working out great for her. And it was just, unfortunately, the producers, not that the producers were being racist, but they viewed their audience as members who wouldn't want to watch a black actress as a leading role in that show. Exactly, yeah.
So, and the producers, I'm sure some of them are racist. It's the 60s. Yeah, yeah. It's a terrible, tough time for America.
Very bad time. Yeah. And so she got in, she's working it and everything. Then down the road, I mean, you know, mid season two, I think mm-hmm. is where it was that she, was kind of getting harassed, having a hard time. I mean, just racism was rampant in our country at the time for sure. I mean, it's as if it's gone away, but it was hard for her. And she explained a story where she was trying to just go to work one day, and the guy at the gate wouldn't let her in. And she's like, you know, I work here. And he's like, nope, you're not on my list. They must have fired you. Go away. And she's like, what, are you kidding me? Like, you see me every day for, you know, weeks. Like, you know, I work here. So anyway, she had to drive, you know, down the street, enter at a different gate, and walk back to that studio lot, and just wasting a bunch of her time and everything like that. And other issues that had come up repeatedly were just bothering her. So she went ahead and told Gene Roddenberry, like, hey, you know, I'm sorry, but I can't handle this anymore. Yeah. I gotta quit. I got this offer from Broadway, which she'd always wanted to be on. So she's like, I got a gig on Broadway. I'm going to take it. And he is like, whoa, whoa, whoa. So she gave in her, handed in her
letter of resignation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's like, whoa, 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 just, you know, before you make this rash decision, think about it over the weekend and talk to me on Monday and we'll work this out. And so after that, over the weekend, she went to like a charity fundraiser event.
When you get to that moment, I want to be able to read her exact words of this account, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah. No, that'd be great.
So she
goes to this charity fundraiser event, and, you know, she's mixing and mingling and stuff like that. And she hears that, you know, this guy wants to talk to her, and she's like, okay, I'll talk to whoever it is. Come to find out, and they say, oh yeah, this guy's a real big fan. He wants to talk to you. And come to find out, it's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Yeah. And she was like shocked, like, what, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. wants to speak to me?
Yeah.
Little old me. So she was stoked to hear from him, and he went on about what a great fan he is. But what you have exactly, what did she say?
She has three books that she written, and there's so many great little quotes from her that are just like little sparks of interesting joy. So all right, here we go. I thought it was a Trekkie, so I said, sure. I looked across the room, and whoever the fan was had to wait, because there was Dr. Martin Luther King walking towards me with his big grin on his face. He reached out to me and said, yes, Miss Nichols, I am your greatest fan. He said that Star Trek was the only show that he and his wife, Coretta, would allow their three little children to stay up and watch. She told King about her plans to leave the series because she wanted to take a role tied to Broadway. I never got to tell him why, because he said, you cannot. For the first time on television, we will be seen as we should be seen every day, as intelligent, quality, beautiful people who can sing and dance and can go to space and who are professors and lawyers. Dr. King Jr. went further in stating, if you leave, that door will be closed because your role is not a black role and it is not a female role. It can be filled with anybody, even an alien. Which I thought like, oh shit. Well, like, that just, I didn't even think about how mounting that is. Like, you don't need to replace Nichelle Nichols with a Nichelle Nichols lookalike. It could be another Vulcan or whatever you want, you know?
Or a little android or a robot dog. Like, they could do almost any, the computer system could just be the one that does all the communications.
So if she left, like, he knew, like, you right now are the example and we might never have this chance again. And so he's just like, please don't leave. And what a heartfelt plea from one of the greatest humans that ever lived.
Yeah. And like, and obviously when you hear her testimony of it, this was like huge for her. Yeah. It's, you know, completely flipped her on her head. So she, you know, went back and you were actually telling me earlier too, when she went back to talk to Gene Roddenberry about it. And she's like, yeah, you know, I don't know if she explained the whole story to him, what happened.
She but did. Oh, she by the way, she did. And Gene Roddenberry cried when he heard that Martin Luther King Jr. Watched the show. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she says, I need to take back my letter of resignation. And he pulls it out and it's actually already torn up. He already didn't accept her resignation, which, I mean, what are you going to do? She's quitting.
Right, but still, it's a good little, it's a good story.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Then she went on to, you know, finish season two and did season three and movies and mainly being there as the representative of, you know, your race and involved with the community in that way, inspiring young women. She, you know, she inspired Whoopi Goldberg to be in Next Generation. Yeah. She wasn't even going to be an actress until she saw Uhura on the screen. And then she's like, wow, I could do that too then, right? And so that Guinan motivated her. Sorry, and then And then she saw Geordi LaForge in Next Generation. So she, you know, got in contact with the producers. And she was already an actress acting in movies.
At that point, she was pretty big.
And so she's like, hey, I want a role, you know, whatever you guys can do, whatever you can pull together. And they're like, wait, you want to be on our show? Like, you're a legit actress. And she's like, yeah. Like, she was excited to do it. So that was pretty cool, too.
I would like to talk about her NASA section next, if you don't mind. Hold on. We first got to talk about the kiss, which is one of the most important moments in television. It's what she's most identified for people who are not Star Trek fans. So, okay.
Do you know what episode that is?
I do. The episode's called Plato's Stepchildren. I'm going to read this word for word from the Wikipedia, and it has a quote from Nichelle Nichols' book, her first book. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in her role as Lieutenant Uhura, Nichols kissed white actor William Shatner as Captain James Kirk in November 22nd, 1968, in the Star Trek episode Plato's Stepchildren. The episode is cited as the first example of an interracial kiss on U.S. television. The Shatner-Nichols kiss was seen as groundbreaking, even though though it was portrayed as having been forced by alien telekinesis. English is hard, guys. There was some praise and almost no dissent, amazingly. In her autobiography, Beyond Uhura, Star Trek and Other Memories, Nichols cited a letter from a white Southerner who wrote, okay, so this is a quote from her book, okay, guys? I am totally opposed. This is a guy who wrote to her. I am totally opposed to mixing of races. However, anytime a red-blooded American boy like Captain Kirk gets a beautiful dame in his arms like that, that looks like Uhura, he ain't gonna fight it.
But yeah, so that's awesome. That, I mean, first interracial kiss on live television. Yeah. And so we talked before about this, how the producers didn't like that, obviously. I mean, they were already against having her, but then after she'd been in the show for a while, she really stuck. People loved her. There's a lot of fan craze. And then, so they couldn't just get rid of her. But then this is kind of pushing the envelope again. Like, well, okay, she could be there, but she's got to sit in her chair and push buttons. Yeah. And, you know, she's getting more and more involved. Then this kiss happens. While they're filming it, they're telling them, okay, but you guys can't kiss. Like, you gotta, you know, hug, high five, you know, fist bump, whatever. But we're not going to put a kiss on TV. And every take, Kirk would kiss her. And then they're getting frustrated. Finally, at the end, he's like, okay, damn it, I'll give you one the way you want it. he didn't kiss her, but then he turns and looks at the camera cross-eyed. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, oh man, that's just okay. So they can't use that. If they were really good at splicing, right, they probably could.
We've seen their editing, though. Yeah, they couldn't have fixed it. These guys didn't edit very well.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be fair, editing it must be hard when you only have 1 week before the next episode's got
to
be ready.
I've talked to you and Kevin about this. They filmed these things. They didn't, like, it wasn't all in just 1 week before the next episode aired. Yeah. They filmed ahead of time.
They had different crews. Working on it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I would like to talk about our NASA thing next. So after the cancellation of Star Trek, Nichols volunteered her time in a special project with NASA to recruit minority and female personnel for the space agency. By the way, this is, I'm now reading this verbatim. She began this work by making an affiliation between NASA and a company which she helped to run called Women in Motion. So guys, after you listen to this, there's actually a documentary about Nichelle Nichols' work with NASA called Women in Motion. So please check that out. Okay. The program was a huge success. Among those that were recruited was Dr. Sally Ride, the first American female astronaut, and United States Air Force Colonel Guion Bluford, the first African-American astronaut, as well as Judith Resnick and Ronald Nair, who both flew successful missions during the space shuttle program before their sad death in the Challenger space accident of 86. There are, I mean, just a list of famed, honored astronauts that all chalk it up to that time Nichelle Nichols came out to my area and talked to us about the space program. She was an ambassador that really brought a lot of new voices and new talent to the organization. It's really quite beautiful.
And that's amazing. Like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was saying, you know, you are an icon. These kids see you and they realize, you know, not only can the future be beautiful, but I can be a part of it. In the past, people were writing, you know, scripts and shows and movies and stuff about space and the future and all this, and there was no black people in it. Yeah. So in their minds, it's like, okay, eventually we're going to be eradicated or
like Flash go extinct Gordon. Somehow. If you see Flash Gordon, it's all just like white people and gold. And then if there's anybody of any other color, they're the villain. And so it's like Kevin and you have both talked about in the past, sci-fi is the lens in which you look at today's problems. Well, if you do that and you see that everybody who's not white is a villain, then you feel bad. Like the villain in a lot of those old ones were, usually they had like the, you know, Asian stereotypes and stuff like that going on. And it was like, well, how the hell am I supposed to feel kind of thing? And so Nichelle Nichols broke that mold, you know?
Yeah. And then, so not only did she do it through TV, but in real life, going out and working with NASA, bringing, you know, plucking these kids out of these programs and saying, hey, cool, you're ready to come to NASA. Yeah. Like, we're going to diversify right here, right now. And, you know, so successful. It was pretty awesome. One thing I wanted to point out too, it's probably not well known, but Sally Ride, you said, was the first female American astronaut in space. She's also later in her life, I think it was shortly before her death, came out to the world saying that she was actually lesbian too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So she was the first lesbian female in space as well.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah. Let's see, what was the next part I wanted to talk about? Sorry, John, I got a lot of notes.
We're just going over Uhura getting into the NASA.
Yeah, so just basically, field. You know, she not only did that, of course, graciously for us Trekkies, she also did conventions up until the year 2015. She did have a stroke in 2015 that really hampered her mobility and stuff like that. So at that point, she stopped doing conventions. She retired from the convention game. But before that, she was going around and doing the conventions, which can you explain a little bit what it's like as a true Trekkie, Jonathan, to go to one of these Star Trek conventions?
Oh, it's so hard to control yourself.
Says the guy with a giant Tuvok poster.
Right? You don't know what it's like until you're there. Yeah. There's so much just, if there's no stars, no celebrities you want to meet, there's just ambient energy from everybody's excited about the same thing as you. Everybody loves what you love. And they want to talk about it and represent it. And people are, you know, dressing the same way you want to dress. And people are with more confidence than you are there in crazy cool costumes that you're like, oh man, I wish I had the confidence of that guy because he knows how
to
represent.
The next time you might have that confidence. Your first time, definitely not. Exactly. But you know, eventually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Once the waters are nice and warm. But then you have some of your favorite actors who play some of your favorite characters are there and they want to meet and mingle and sign your books and stuff like that. And, you know, sometimes you'll sit at a panel and listen to them answer questions and just really get to know them and see them in person. It's just, it's so much fun. And a lot of times there's unique merchandise and stuff that you can get, you know, only there. And it's just, you have to go. If you haven't gone to a convention yet,
definitely
don't wait. Go to the next one. There's conventions everywhere. The small local ones and, you know, bigger ones. I think the next one is going to be, the next big Star Trek convention is going to be in Seattle, right?
I am going to it. Yeah. I think we're all going to it. We have to find a way.
I think so. There's still going to be a smaller convention in Vegas where they used to have
the convention every year.
Yeah. So, you know, you can still check that one out if you want to go to Vegas. But yeah, I'm looking forward to going to Seattle.
When they do that big one in San Francisco, because now the big one's moving, it used to be in Vegas every year. Now it's moving around. So it's to Seattle.
Yeah.
When it comes to San Francisco, dude, we are doing it up. I cannot wait. Always go to conventions, right? Conventions are just such a great place to meet friends. But the BlizzCon and Star Trek convention, there's an extra layer of just like unity. You get into an elevator. Like, it's funny because like I'm talking about this, but when I went to BlizzCon with Daniel just was not a social butterfly. So that some people are not gonna work out. You get into an elevator, you just start talking about the debate of Tuvok versus and Neelix combining. You know, you just have a freaking debate about something fun.
Whether it saved Tuvix or not,
you could walk up to anybody like, "What do you think about Tuvix?" And you could stay there for an hour debating it, and it's just so cool.
Right.
And I remember very well, speaking of Tuvok, he was the very first person, a celebrity, that we saw at this thing. And when he came out, I was overwhelmed with joy. It was almost like you could feel the energy just come off of him when he walked. I was like, "That's freaking Tim Russ. That's actually Tuvok right there." And it just kept happening. I mean, that weekend we met Shatner, we met Jonathan. I mean, it was a long list. 7 of 9 was there. It's just such a cool freaking convention. And I mean, Jonathan Frakes, guys, I'm going to tell you right now, Jonathan Frakes was sitting next to Q, by the way. I'm just going to throw that cool sentence out there. He was, I think Data was actually sitting next to him. Oh, God.
Yeah.
But he was just so genuinely nice. I came up and had him sign a Pez. I have the one with Nicole Nichols next to me over here, but I had him sign a Pez, and he says, I said something like, "Oh, I loved you in Gargoyles too." And he's like, "I loved Gargoyles." And we start talking about his work in Gargoyles because he's Xanatos in Gargoyles. And it's just like, well, I could die happy now. This is perfect.
Like every time you meet someone, you want to like, okay, this was cool. Can we get drinks later though? You want to like hang out more. Like, let's be best friends.
certain ones you get the vibe of like, oh, you're just a normal person who's a super cool. Yeah. Jonathan Frakes, 100% that vibe. Shatner, not so much. Shatner, I definitely got the vibe of like, yeah. But some people were just super, super cool.
Yeah. If you ever look at Tim Russell, he's on social media and stuff. He helps everyone.
He's got a band.
Joins every once in a while the Delta Flyer podcast and stuff. Super down to earth guy. Yeah. Like, he's the kind of guy you can just go have a beer with and just talk about your day or whatever. It's just really cool. So,
yeah.
But definitely go to conventions.
So, Uhura was going to these conventions, back on track. Uhura was doing these conventions and just spreading. She embraced the Star Trek community. Much like many of the TOS people at first, she was like, "Oh, it's just Trekkies." But then realized the inspiration that she was bringing and was like, "I'm here for the fans. Let's go meet them."
Yeah.
And so it's just so wonderful. So other things that she did, she voiced a lot of characters. She was a recurring voice for Alyssa Mazza's mother, Diane Mazza, on Gargoyles, which we talk about Gargoyles probably every episode is kind of required.
Oh, yeah. All of them.
Yeah. She played Thoth on Batman the Animated Series, probably the best version of Batman ever. And she also was on Simpsons. She's been in Simpsons a few times, actually. And she a big voice in Futurama playing herself. She actually played as another character and herself on Futurama. She's so
amazing. Crazy. Yeah. Oh yeah. The head, her head
version
in a jar. Yeah. That's so
funny. That episode has a lot of, I mean, it's Star Trek. It's TOS people on that episode a lot. So.
Yeah. Especially I think her and Sulu.
Yeah.
And Kirk, I don't know if it was voiced by Shatner.
I think Shatner was on that one too. I think they actually got the actual voice guys. And then there's actually just side note again, because we like to get side noted. There's a Family Guy episode that has like everybody from TNG on it too. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Where Stewie like teleports them all in and he wants to like geek out and talk to them about stuff. And they're just like super boring, just average people. Right. And it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. She's been in all kinds of stuff.
In her honor, there's an asteroid named after Uhura. There's an asteroid named after her. They've had her come out to shuttle launches, and they've had her explore different things that are like not even seen to the public. They were so honored every time Uhura can come out, because she inspired so many people at NASA. She even flew on their observatory plane that like goes up near space. She flew on that as an honored guest at one point. That was like in 2014 or something like that. It was pretty late.
I remember hearing her talk about that too. That it was I don't remember the type of plane. I want to say a 777 or something like that, but special plane where they put like a glass roof in it, right? So they get up to the edge of the atmosphere where they can actually, you could see out into space.
Yeah.
And, you know, just for, I don't know, so many minutes, whatever, then come back down. But yeah, that's pretty crazy.
It wasn't 2015. It's a Boeing 747 SP and it's called the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy. Pretty wicked name for a plane.
Fancy name.
Yeah. And it's, and then one of the cool things too, is she was there for the christening of the shuttle Enterprise. So just a wonderful life. And there's so much more, of course, about her, but I was happy that we could just geek out about her a little bit. And I think that's pretty fun.
Yeah. She's a great person and inspiration to everybody. Inspiration to everybody. And it just to continue on her mission, right? We just got to be kind to each other, love one another, bring people up, stop spreading the hate. Our country right now, it's terribly divided. It's filled with hate and there's no need for it. It's not going to bring us to the future that Star Trek has promised. You know, it's not going to bring us to Gene Roddenberry's future. It's going to be, you know, Star Wars in a constant battle to death is what this hate brings. So, you know, and in her memory, embrace her mission and spread her love.
Yeah. And instead of attacking the other side, quote unquote, there isn't other sides, by the way, but attacking the other side, lead by example, be the better person with an open hand, show them a future that's a utopia, go out and seek people and just spread kindness and lead by example. And good to miss you.
And it's really sad that we're not going to be able to see her in any more conventions. And there's a lot of other great actors and actresses out there that you guys like just as much as we do. So go to those conventions, go meet them, go see, you know, Shatner and Jonathan Frakes and all these great actors before it's too late. Cause this is really sad that now, you know, I never met her in person and I don't have that opportunity anymore.
I would really like to meet George Takei before he passes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That'd be great.
Well, guys, I think that's probably where we're going to close it out. What do you think?
I think so. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to check out our website and our social medias. We're on Twitter, Instagram,
Facebook.
Hang
out on our Discord. We've been talking a lot about DC Comics and Discord right now.
Nice. Next. Oh, wait.
Ooh, real quick. I'll just step in real quick. We have a giveaway where you can pick one of three, any of our shirts on our store. You guys pick up any of the shirts. Send a picture of your review for this podcast or any podcast on the Geek Freaks Network, but including this one. Send it to one of our social media accounts, and you'll be entered in the giveaway. We'll give those away at the last day of this month.
I hope you enjoyed that, guys. Join us next time for Season 2, Episode 17, A Piece of the Action. And until then, Transporter Room, 2 to beam up.